And thank you for listening to today's episode of JAT Cast, the official podcast of the Journal of Athletic Training. My name is Luke Donovan, and I will be your host. When I'm not podcasting, I am a faculty member in the athletic training program at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. A little housekeeping before we get started. I just want to remind everyone that both papers we will be discussing today can be found on the JAT website and that all content from JAT is open access, meaning it is free of charge to all readers thanks to the funding from the National Athletic Trainers Association. On today's podcast, I will be summarizing an article from the most recent issue of the Journal of Athletic Training. My primary goal is to try to provide you with the best information from this article that you can apply to your clinical practice. Following the article summary, we will be joined by Dr. Adam Lepley to discuss his latest work that was also published in the most recent issue of JAT. Before we get started, we want to take a minute to survey the scene and give you some background in the area of patient-reported and functional outcomes that are important for return to sport after ACL reconstruction. Within the United States, about 250,000 people will have their ACL reconstructed annually, and most of the individuals will have an expectation that they'll be able to return to sport within about 6 months after the surgery. The main issue with this belief is that the average time for return to sport ranges from about 7 to 12 months, depending on a number of patient-oriented and functional factors. Unfortunately, a review paper found that 40% of studies listed no formal criteria to determine readiness for return to sport. Of studies that did include criteria, the most common criteria included general orthopedic examination of knee range of motion, joint effusion, laxity by using the Lachman's test, and length of time since surgery. Deficits in strength and biomechanical function may predispose the patient to re-injuring the involved limb or even that of the contralateral limb. Which is of interest of this is that neither of those measures are included in the common criteria for return to sport. In addition to this, patients who return to sport with strength and functional symmetry that's greater than 90% had significant reduction in re-injury rates, which once again points the direction of the importance of strength and functional symmetry following ACL reconstruction. Researchers have suggested that patients who underwent ACL reconstruction continue to show quadriceps strength improvement in the months following return to activity. Considering that a relationship between quadriceps strength and biomechanic function has been established, it seems logical that biomechanic function also continues to improve after return to activity. However, it is unclear based on the current evidence if this is true. Now with that important background, here are the most important things I learned from the recent article: continued improvements in quadriceps strength and biomechanic symmetry of the knee after post-operative ACL reconstruction rehabilitation. Is it time to reconsider the 6 months return to activity criteria? This article was written by Mr. Michael Caron and colleagues from the Universities of Michigan and Connecticut. In this paper, the authors attempted to address this gap in clinical knowledge by examining the continued recovery of strength and biomechanical symmetry at the time of return to activity, and then again, more than 12 months post-ACL reconstruction. The authors believed that comparing strength and biomechanics at these times would allow them to ascertain whether improvements continued to occur after patients were released from rehabilitation. So more or less, this article's primary purpose was to answer the question where we left off in our survey of the scene. Now, the general methods that the authors used was by recruiting 12 women and 8 men who had ACL reconstruction and that were cleared to return to sport using a series of objective criteria, which included completion of an agility program without demonstrating any pain or swelling, and the ability to complete 15 repetitions of single leg press exercise using a load that was equal to 100% of their body weight. On average, participants met these criteria roughly about 7 months after surgery, which falls in line with the information that we provided earlier. Participants completed bilateral assessment of quadriceps strength and also three-dimensional single-leg hopping biomechanics at the time of clearance, so at that seven-month mark after their surgery, and at a second visit that was more than 12 months post-ACL reconstruction. Differences in strength and hopping biomechanics were compared between the ACL reconstruction and healthy limbs at the time of return to sport. Limb symmetry for all outcome measures was also compared between the return to sport time point and the time point that was greater than 12 months post-surgery. And at the end of the study, that time point turned out to be approximately 18 months. Now, the results of this study was that at clearance for return to sport, so at that 7 month time point, quadriceps strength and biomechanical symmetry values were less than 80% when comparing the ACL reconstruction limb to that of the contralateral limb. From a quadriceps strength perspective, the authors observed improvements from the clearance to return to sport to greater than 12 months post ACL reconstruction visit for the isometric quadriceps symmetry and isokinetic quadriceps symmetry. More importantly, both the isometric and isokinetic quadriceps symmetry values were on average near 90% at the greater than 12-month visit. Biomechanically, knee flexion angles and knee extension forces significantly improved between visit at clearance for return to sport and the greater than 12-month visit. However, in this study, only 3 of the 7 total outcome measures that showed improvement at the 12-month post ACL reconstruction met the recommendations of greater than 90%. So the primary take-home points of this study is that patients with ACL reconstruction exhibited asymmetry in strength and biomechanics at the time of clearance for return to play, despite the evidence that indicates that this puts them at an elevated risk for re-injury, not only to their involved limb, but also that of their contralateral limb. These asymmetries, along with self-reported function, did improve over time. However, asymmetries of more than 10% were still present more than 12 months post ACL reconstruction. In fact, on average, it was around 18 months post ACL reconstruction. Because of this, the authors recommend a more stringent and objective criteria for return to sport and a continued focus on quadriceps strengthening exercise, including eccentric exercise, in order to increase the likelihood of safe return to sport. At this time, we would like to transition to the author interview portion of the podcast. Today, we will be interviewing Dr. Adam Lepley from the University of Connecticut about his recent publication in the Journal of Athletic Training. It's with my great pleasure to welcome Dr. Adam Lepley to today's edition of JATcast. Dr. Lepley, do you mind introducing yourself to the listeners and providing a little bit about your background?
No, not at all. So Adam Lepley, I'm currently a faculty at the University of Connecticut, where I serve a role in both the athletic training and physical therapy programs. A little bit background about myself. I received my bachelor's degree in athletic training from Grand Valley State University, my master's from University of Minnesota, where I worked clinically in their sports medicine staff. And then I went on to get my PhD at the University of Toledo in 2014.
Thank you for that introduction, Dr. Lepley. So what really we want to hear about, though, is your latest publication in this past edition of the Journal of Athletic Training that is titled Quadriceps Function, Knee Pain, and Self-Reported Outcomes in Patient with ACL Reconstruction. Do you mind taking a few minutes to describe a summary of this paper?
Yeah, sure thing. So essentially what we wanted to do is longitudinally track ACL patients from the time that they were injured or right before their surgery all the way until the point that they were cleared. And so we really had 3 time points of looking at pre-surgery, a few weeks to 2 to 3 weeks after surgery, and then again at the time in which they were cleared. And we wanted to track a variety of different outcomes from physical, so we measured muscle strength, measures of muscle activation, to symptoms such as pain, and then also their patient-reported outcomes. So we used a few validated scales to look at whether or not they were reporting they were ready to return to sport or not. We used a psychological scale, the Psychological Response to Sport Injury Index, to assess their emotional response to the injury. And then we also used the IKDC, which is a standardized questionnaire assessing their self-reported knee function. So again, we wanted to track to see how these things were progressing throughout the injury and then how they were related to each other. And so one of the main findings that we found was that throughout the time frame of the injury, both psychological and physical function was changing, and they were almost interacting with each other. So higher levels of pain, higher levels of pain with lower levels of quadricep strength were actually predictive of poor psychological outcomes, and also vice versa. So poor psychological outcomes actually influenced some of the physical outcomes that our patients were seeing.
So what really led you to develop this project and incorporate some other outcome measures that measured psychological components of individuals who sustain ACL reconstruction?
Yeah, so you know, I think the how do you feel is important, and I think the IKDC questionnaire that we used kind of highlights that. It talks about how does your knee feel going up and down stairs? You have pain? Does it click? Things like that. But we'd also know there's more than just how does your knee feel. And so the psychological response to sport injury inventory, you know, really goes into, okay, well, my knee hurts, but how does that affect you when you go about your daily activities, or how does that influence when you're participating in sports? And then the ACL RSI, which our return to sport index, that really, you know, assesses what the athlete perceives as their readiness to return to play. So, you know, just because your knee feels great doesn't mean that you psychologically feel that you're ready to return back to sport, and vice versa as well. So there's a lot of components to psychological function and psychological health in our athletes. So we wanted to make sure that we caught a variety of those different components.
Something that I was not necessarily surprised at was seeing that there's a relationship between pain and some of these larger functional questionnaires. But an area that I was a little bit surprised with is just seeing how much knee strength correspond to some of these physical measures. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, so you know, there's been emerging work to show that, you know, quadricep strength is relatively predictive of long-term outcomes in patients, whether it be joint space narrowing like osteoarthritis or self-reported outcomes. And so I think restoring quadricep strength, you know, as from a clinician standpoint, it tends to be one of the things that we target. It's one of the things that we always try to improve. But there's a lot of systematic reviews out there to show that we're not really doing that great of a job at doing that. So people are returning back to sport at 80 to 90% of their uninjured leg from a quadricep strength perspective. In their injured leg or their uninjured leg also has some kind of neural inhibition or muscle strength deficits as well. So, you know, this weakness may actually influence from a perceptual standpoint. If I feel or I know that I'm weaker in my muscle, I might not feel like I'm ready to go back to sport, even if it's 90% or 100% of my uninjured leg, if I have these deficits in this muscle strength.
If you were able to just highlight one area in that discussion of this paper, what do you really see the most important finding to be?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, if you think from a statistical perspective that we were able to predict 74% of how somebody feels. So 3/4 of how somebody feels is reportedly just because of their strength and the pain in their knee. So, you know, just from a pure mathematical perspective, if I am able to improve strength and decrease pain over time in my patient, then I have a really good shot of improving, you know, how their knee feels, right? And how they're, if they're ready to return to sport, and improve their psychological response to that injury. So, you know, yes, we have modalities and interventions that we can improve strength and pain, but we can do better, and we can find more targeted interventions to help do that. And then we have a really good shot of improving long-term and short-term outcomes of these patients.
I, you know, of course, wouldn't be able to let you off the hook without discussing any potential limitations of this project. And you alluded to it a little bit in the paper, but do you mind just sharing how you could potentially apply this to patient populations outside of those who you actually used in this study?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things looking back on the study that we wish we would have done is actually track to see who did return back. So, you know, we assessed somebody's readiness, whether or not they psychologically felt ready to return to sport, but we didn't see who actually did, right? And so I think that's one of the limitations of figuring out, well, yes, you're ready to return to sport, but some people think that they're ready and they're really not. And some people, right, think they're not ready, but they really are. So I think that's an important distinction that we're not able to sparse out in this individual study, that further tracking long-term return to play outcomes, if you would, or percentages of people that actually do return to their pre-injury activity levels, would provide a lot more valuable insight. Going back to other populations, again, you know, looking at the fact that, you know, this is just one model of injury, so ACL injury of the knee. But I think this can potentially be applied to other ligamentous injuries of such as like the ankle or the hip, and applying those to different populations would be very interesting.
Did doing this project change your opinion at all or thought process when working with patients who sustained an ACL injury? And I guess phrasing this question in both prior to the surgery on your interaction with them, seeing that you saw how pain is related to perceived function, but then also after the surgery.
Yeah, so that was I think a big finding for us as well is showing that preoperative measures can actually influence our postoperative measures. And that's been shown, you know, in a few studies showing that, you know, prehab or rehabilitation prior to the surgery is actually beneficial. And I think that speaks to not only intervening early on, you know, reducing swelling and reducing pain prior to the patient going into surgery, but then this study really speaks to that psychological aspect, you know, maybe counseling or, you know, direct patient education prior to surgery may actually be beneficial for their recovery of those psychological outcomes after surgery. So I think, you know, kind of what you're saying about, you know, would it change patient care? You know, I kind of hope it does, because I think that, you know, thinking about the patient before surgery is just maybe just as important as thinking about the patient after surgery,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And addressing some of those impairments before the individual goes under the knife is important and could potentially be beneficial for your long-term care of that patient.
But, you know, kind of going down and keeping it in this realm of our clinical setting, how can you actually, or how would you advise clinicians to adapt some of the measurement techniques that you use within the study, whether it being some of your patient-reported outcome measures or your measurement strategies of strength?
Yeah, so, you know, we use isokinetic dynamometer, so not everybody has a Biodex or a Cybex dynamometer that they can use to assess muscle strength. There are many other clinical ways to do that, like a handheld dynamometer to give you an objective assessment. So, you know, there are ways to assess strength clinically that I think are more well-known. From the psychological aspect side, from the scales, you know, we use readily available, validated subjective questionnaires that can be found relatively easily. And so I think that it's not a matter of how you can change that to, you know, allow it to be used in clinical practice. It's just a matter of using it, right? And so it's not something that we really harp on that much. We harp on patient-reported outcomes, but there's a variety of different patient-reported outcomes. And, you know, as I kind of talked about earlier, there's a wide range of scales that you can use depending on, you know, the patient population that you're looking at. So finding these questionnaires and finding, I guess, objective assessments of what it is that you're trying to target in these patients. And so, again, R is looking at the psychological response to that injury and their readiness to return to sport, I think are relatively easy to incorporate into the clinical setting, whether it be before surgery or, you know, at their return to play time point.
Well, you've already alluded that accessing or having, and I think this would be something beneficial if we could provide, and we will do this, links to some of those main patient-reported outcomes that you've used in the study.
Yeah, absolutely.
To allow them to be readily available for any clinicians who are listening to this and want to implement them into their own practice. But so you already demonstrated that those are readily accessible and been validated, but what other barriers do you think clinicians may face when trying to implement the results of these the results of your study, and how would you suggest them combat the barriers, whether it's time, getting coaches on board, getting parents on board, et cetera?
Yeah, I think time is can be a big one. These are questionnaires that can be used at pre-participation physicals, but we know that our pre-participation physicals are always jam-packed with time, so it's not necessarily time sensitive to use these measures. But I think one of the barriers that I see, and again, talking with clinicians, is the fact that they don't necessarily feel that they are, qualified or ready to handle with psychological dysfunction. And so, you know, I think that Katie is doing a better job of incorporating that into the programs and, you know, making sure that we're training new up and coming athletic trainers how to deal with mental health care and psychological dysfunction in our athletes. But basically teaching and telling clinicians to not be afraid to use interdisciplinary healthcare and reaching out to sports psychologists or psychologists and bringing them into the care of the athlete, and having these objective measures to provide to those interdisciplinary healthcare professionals so that you can provide, again, holistic care to that athlete.
You know, if you don't mind sharing with us, what's your next big question? Where does this fit in, and or does it fit in? Where are you headed to now, Dr. Leffy?
Yeah, so, you know, my background is mostly in neuromuscular control. So looking at the nervous system and the muscular system. And so this study, you know, looking at the psychological aspect, was trying to merge those things together. And I think we did at least a decent job from an initial study to look at, you know, the relationship between our physical and psychological outcomes. So one study that we have going on here at UConn is kind of taking that one step farther and looking at actual brain activation using fMRI and seeing how motor areas of the brain or other areas that are responsible for psychological health of the brain are actually changed or altered in patients with ACL reconstruction. And then again, taking it one step farther, seeing how these brain activations are changed, but then how do they influence clinical function?
I can't thank you enough, Dr. Lapley. And hearing about your next big question, you're obviously out there reading a lot of different literature. So if you don't mind sharing, and it doesn't have to be a Donovan paper, but do you mind sharing with the best paper that you've read lately? And it could be within the field of sports medicine or even outside of that.
Yeah, so I think one of the really good articles that I've taken a look at, I think it came out in May or June of this year in AJSM out of Delaware, looking at the comparison of those that stayed ACL deficient and those that went on to go get reconstructed. And they followed two different groups 5 years post. And really what the article is showing is that there's not a lot of difference in physical, psychological, and symptom outcomes 5 years after an individual elects to stay deficient or ACL deficient, or those that elect to undergo reconstruction. So maybe taking a good hard look at our clinical decision-making of, you know, what really constitute a patient to undergo ACL reconstruction in, you know, based on patient goals and patient demands, you know, is remaining ACL deficient something that's, you know, just as good for that patient, I think would be something that's very interesting.
Well, that is it for today's JAT cast. Please remember to rate and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, please follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at JAT_NATA on all three platforms. Thank you for listening and keep a lookout for next month's JAT cast.